So welcome everybody to a very special episode of Beyond the Rider. This episode is going to focus on Autism Awareness Month, and we'll get into why that is so important to me and for my very special guest, Big Smitty. Big Smitty is a fellow YouTuber, a friend, and also a fellow parent of an autism child. Smitty and I had been introduced to each other. We had known each other in the community. Smitty put out an amazing video last year on raising a child with autism that really struck me at my core because I have a child with autism. That inspired me to put out that video, and it's built an amazing friendship with me and Smitty, as well as a wonderful support system. So Smitty, thank you from the bottom of my heart for not only inspiring me to do that video, which we were talking about pre-show, has touched so many people, but thank you for the support and giving me somebody to bounce ideas off with. This is just an amazing thing of what YouTube can bring.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk and complain about the bad part about YouTube because we both have seen it. Yep. I've had crappy comments and people say all kind of things about me because, you know, everybody loves a fat guy on a gold wing, you know.
The only thing you can insult me about is I'm fat, you're not trolling hard enough. Come up with something better.
It's like I got at work the other day, made a fat joke, and I said, "Dude, I've been fat since I was 6. I was like, you've got so much to work with, and you went the fat route? I was like, that's the best you got? I was like, dude, I feel bad for you that you're not smart enough to work with all this.
Go back to troll school.
Yeah, man. What's the deal?
I'm
grateful. Thank you for asking me to do this. Thank you for being a buddy to me, being a friend, man. We've had some good discussions about autism and about being an autism parent and what it takes and what it does.
I appreciate your candor. It's not an easy subject sometimes to approach.
Yeah, you know, it's not, but I think once you get it out, when I made my video, I got it off my chest. Like once you get it out there and you say, okay, it's out there, people know. I think that video, dude, at one point in time had less than 200 views, but I got like 10 different messages from people saying, hey, thank you for making that. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
And that's what it was about. I told you before, I don't care if I have 5 views. If I get 5 views and 5 different people got help or felt better about their journey, then you know what, man? 5, hell, 1. You know what I mean? It wouldn't matter to me, so.
And that's what I said to you too. It's this and having that experience that more people reach out to you and you realize, well, shit, I am not alone. You know, and so just to put this conversation in context, my child is 23 years old and your son is how old?
My son is 7 now.
7. So we have, we are on both. We literally are on different sides of the spectrum So I guess I'll start off with my experience. My son, Caleb, was not diagnosed until he was 17. We had a really hard time getting him help. I'm in a blended family, so we weren't married till Caleb was like 16. And he was diagnosed in 17, was an eye-opening experience. As far as spectrum concerned, he's on the higher end of the functioning spectrum, just to put the conversation in perspective. And I just wanted to set the tone so you know kind of where my experience started very late in life, where your experience started earlier, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, so my son, and what's weird is, I hear other people's stories and I read about things and I hear people say like that the light switch just kind of turned off. And so for my son, when he was a year old, you know, he was saying our names, his mama and daddy and his brothers and sisters' names. And then right before 2 years old, like a switch just flipped. And we had like just gotten moved back into our house from having a tornado damage the house and things. So we thought, okay, it's a new environment for him, you know, some of that. And then, my wife, Victoria, immediately knew something was going on. So I'm thinking, okay, he's late, delayed. I mean, he's not going to talk for a while. You know, he's a late talker. He's not like his dad, right? So I, he doesn't shut up. I was like, so he'll get there. Well, then she could see things, and he was, and that was like the pointing and the grunting that you hear people talk about. Mm-hmm. And he lost all his verbal skills were gone. His words were gone. And so she knew. My wife had already started researching, and she knew we had an issue. I was in denial. I'm like, no, he's fine. He'll be fine. She finally, man, it was begrudgingly, I allowed her to get him tested, and we found out he was autistic at 2. So the last 5 years, we've been learning and helping him and learn. I think the biggest learning experience has been for us as to what do we need to do? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, 2 years old was when we got diagnosed, and now he's at 7. And he is, like you said about your son, he's on the higher functioning end. We have an autism diagnosis, we have an ADHD diagnosis, and now we have a dyslexia diagnosis. So we just got the dyslexia diagnosis like 3 months ago, maybe, something like that. So, which helps, because it helps him, helps us get, man, people are afraid to get the diagnosis sometimes.
Yep.
Like, I think there's a lot of people who are afraid because they don't want to find out. That's the hard part. I tell people, look, man, that diagnosis, you know, I know I've heard people tell me, I don't put a label on my kid. No, I understand that. But when you get the diagnosis, you can help them. That's mm-hmm. when you're able to get therapies and able to do things. And now you know where to help your child. You know what I mean?
Well, so, certainly.
That was a big deal for me, just getting the diagnosis and be able to say, okay, what do we do now? You know what I mean? The label, I don't care about labels, but that helped. So, yeah, man, it's been a 5-year journey that we've learned. You've heard me say it. I've told you, my son has taught me more in 5 years than I'll teach him till I'm dead and in the ground. And he just every day he amazes me with something else. So,
yeah, for us it was weird because I was the one that. I was between jobs at the time, and especially from a blended family, it's hard because, you know, when we got married, Kate was seeing things in my son. I was seeing things in her son, good, bad, different, you know, it's a different set of eyes.
Right.
And my experience was hard because when I reached out to the doctor that I spoke to, that I can remember it like it was yesterday. Doctor's like, let me ask you this. And I'd answer. They're like, let me ask you this. They'd answer. And it was almost like they knew the answer when they asked the question.
Right.
And I was like, okay, maybe I'm not crazy. Like maybe we're really onto something. And I was surprised because when they came back with so much information, one of the things that I found encouraging, strangely enough, I didn't think about the legal ramifications of the Americans with Disability Acts. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think about that if he was diagnosed, that provides him with certain employment protection.
Right.
And things like that, that to your point, there's a lot of positive of it because it's like going to the doctor, right? You don't want to go to the black doctor.
You saying that now is the first time that's crossed my mind. I was like, well, hey.
Well, and that's, but when the doctor said it to me, I was like, oh, holy shit. I didn't think about that. Because
you said it just now, I never crossed my mind.
If you have a legal, you know, diagnosis, it opens up a whole different thing. It opens up a different thing for getting help. You know, it opens up a lot of things, and it makes his employers and things like that have to be legally accountable for things.
Right.
You know, and it's important because, as you know, sometimes the reaction someone on the spectrum gives may not be what people would expect.
Right. Well, so that's the thing, and you know, I've told you before, your story with your son gives me hope because your son is functioning and he's doing things and he's got a life, right? And so for me, that gives me hope because, dude, I'm going to tell you, it's kind of sad. And I guess anybody that watches this that has an autistic child, sometimes, you know, back in the day, they used to say the word bedside manner when they talked about doctors. Mm-hmm. And it was much worse years ago. Sometimes it's not that great now. When we left certain doctor visits and certain things, I seriously, when they looked at me and said, you know, he may never live on his own. He may never be able to work. He may be staying with you his whole life. And that's the way it might be. And you're just sitting there like overwhelmed going, is my son not going to be able to function in society? The whole being normal thing. Look, I'm not normal. I don't want my kids.
There is no such thing as normal
anymore. But man, it was you. And people like his, we had a teacher named Amanda that was amazing. I talked about her in my video.
You do, yeah.
that gave us hope. She said, you know what? I've got a little girl. She points a little girl in the hall. She said, that little girl right there is a top reader in the fourth grade right now. And she reminds me, he reminds me a lot of how she behaved when she got here. And she's the top reader now. She goes, so he's going to be fine. Man, we went home like we had tears because we're like, dude, somebody gave us hope. That's all we wanted was some hope. Because, man, we didn't get that. They were like, you know, the pediatrician that said, I think you should get him tested, told Victoria that. And Victoria already had in her mind we were going to get him tested and had to talk me into it. Alpha male. I fix things. Like,
oh, I get it. We're all born with that terrible disease.
Yeah, my dad, he's a fixer. Well, I fix things. So that's me. I'm going to fix things. Something's wrong with my kids. Hey, we're going to fix it.
Yep.
We do this. Oh, let's go buy whatever we need. So it took me having to realize I don't need to fix my son. I just need to help him live the best life he can and understand that he's going to react differently to things than my other kids do. So, but the man, hope. I would say to anybody, that's the hardest part because you feel hopeless. Because when you get the diagnosis, you start looking at people who have children that are not on the high functioning end. You get on, man, Instagram, and you start reading about these parents who have a child that won't speak to anybody, that won't hug or talk. You have parents who have 14-year-old kids who've never told them they love them. That's hard as a parent, man. When Keegan went, as long as he did not tell me he loved me, dude, it tore me up. I was like, I just wanted, if he'll just tell me he loves me one time, I could die happy. And when he finally got verbal and he told me he loved me and stuff, man, we were like, you know, we're in tears. But I think the thing that people don't get hope is that, man, if people watch this thing and they don't get anything else from me or you, either one, man, there's hope. You know, there's people out there going through what you're going through. There's people to reach out to. And don't feel hopeless because there's always somebody there who has been through what you're going through and is willing to talk to you. That's the thing. That's one thing I've learned is about autism parents is that you'll be sitting there at a restaurant and see another family with a kid having some of the same tics as your kid, and they've got a Kindle or an iPad in front of them, or they've got headphones on because it's too loud in the restaurant, and you'll make eye contact with that dad, and you're like, hey. And I've actually had conversations with moms and dads as we're walking by, and I say, y'all have a good night. And they said, hey, the guy's literally thought, hey, can I ask you a question? Sure. He says, you're still on the spectrum? I said, yes, he is. Is yours? Yes, he is. And we had a 30-minute conversation, and you could tell their eyes lit up because they're like, hey, you know, there's somebody else going through what I'm going through, and we're not lost, you know?
Yeah.
That's the things that mean the most to me, you know?
So what was that experience for you like? Because I know – you know, being an IT guy, you know, I don't know what it was like with your experience because I don't know how the age difference is, but we got this. I felt like we got a Carfax. I'm being funny, but that's what I felt like. We were going through this just endless pages of this diagnosis and that diagnosis. And
you're flipping through these and you're literally, okay, so my wife had studied up a lot of things. Victoria's very intelligent. Why she married me, we'll never know, but whatever. You know, she's going through these things and then she's reading what this is and what and you know when they start talking about social function and talking about social interaction and they throw out all these terms and things and you're like, well, I know what social interaction is, but apparently he's terrible at it. And, you know, when you start going through it, my experience was, okay, he's two, we're gonna fix him. I'm gonna fix him. Watch this. We're
gonna fix him. Oh yeah, I get that.
I'm a fixer. Alpha male. I'm big Smitty.
I got Google. I can fix anything.
Yeah, we're gonna fix it, man. I can go get some wrenches. We'll fix anything. And you know, it took me like, man, it took till he was probably four, maybe five, before he told me he loved me. And man, I realized something through that 2 or 3 year span where I just wanted to be told that he loved me. I wanted him to hug me because my son at that time was really standoffish. Now, man, I get hugs and get told I love you, and he wants to lay in the bed with me. He wants me to wrestle. He wants to go talk about animals. He's an animal lover now. But at that time, dude, man, you're leafing through things. You're learning all these things, and it's like horror stories. Mm-hmm. Internet's full of horror stories. So you're scared to death. And as a parent, everybody wants their kids to succeed and do better than they did. There's nobody out there who's going to say, I hope they don't do as well as me. Every one of us wants our kids to succeed, to have a high quality of life and to and enjoy life and be successful and whatever it may be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, man, that it was one of those things where I think Victoria and I just sat there and said, okay, we can't fix him. We're going to help him. We did therapies, behavioral therapy, occupational, speech, everything that we could do. And it made a difference. It did make a difference. And then the things we did at home, it made a difference. And it's like you start seeing little flashes of things. But the main thing that I have taken from it is that so my son's behind academically. Mm-hmm. He's doing well, but he's behind academically. That's hard because I wasn't the smartest, best student in school. I'm probably shocked to hear that. I didn't like school at all. I went because my parents made me. So, you know, he's behind academically. Socially, he's getting better. When the teacher says, hey, by the way, Keegan has found some friends on the playground. He plays with them. Dude, we're overjoyed because he's playing with kids besides his brothers and sisters. And so I think the thing is sometimes it's hard because progress comes slowly. And there's times where you don't see as much progress as you want to. And you're not, I mean, there's things that happen at school that don't happen at home and things that happen at therapy that you don't get to see. But I would tell anybody patience is key and learning what you need to do to help your child thrive is the main thing to me. What does it take? What do I need to do? And that's the things that we've had to learn. You know, I mean, for you with your son being at an older age, well, how did things change for you as far as what were you able to do to try to help him as best that you could?
I think we went through, like you said, we went through the grieving process really hard, especially for me, what was really hard was I was the one that set up the testing. I was the one that really wanted to get it done. And I won't lie, there was a complete moment where I remember calling my friend before we went for the results. And I'm like, what if I'm just an idiot? Like, what if I'm so far off base that I'm wrong? Like, right. I never wanted to be more wrong in my life. Right. No. Now, looking back, 6 years later, it's nothing what I envisioned.
Right.
But for me, it was kind of hard because I didn't. In my line of work, I plan for failure. I mitigate failure. So if I mitigate failure, I succeed. And I didn't know where to start. Do you know what I mean? Because it was like, well, how do you get him gainfully employed? How do you get him a car? How do you get him to drive? Once I got past that initial, oh shit moment, I find myself now thinking back like, oh, remember when we thought we wouldn't be able to do X and now we have.
Right.
But it was really hard because, you know, being a blended family, I had no history to base things on.
Right.
So it was really hard because when you hear someone tell a story in the third person, you're like, well, how is that missed? Or why didn't the doctor do this? Why didn't the doctor? So you don't really have a way to gauge it on. You know what I mean? We're still in the process. We find personally that for us at that age in the high functioning adult section, it's very hard to get help because there's no money in it. If I'm being honest, right? Because if you have someone that's on the very low end of the spectrum, I hate to say it this way, and I don't mean any disrespect to anybody's listening, but that person's a cash cow, right? Because they can get you all kinds of resources because they can make all sorts of money from that. Mm-hmm. But the kids that are just on the, what we like to refer to as that fringe, it's really hard to get them help because they don't see it as a problem, right? If I have a broken leg, you know I have a broken leg.
Right.
But if I have a problem walking, people don't necessarily deal with it. That's not the right analogy.
Right. But I understand where you come from.
Because we went to some of these agencies and we had talked about this before, and they're like, oh, we're gonna get your kid a job and we're gonna help him out. Well, then we found out that our kid was skipping work. It happens, right? Every kid skips work, but it was overwhelming for him. But they didn't call him or they didn't call me and be like, hey, there might be a problem. It was just like, oh, well, okay. You know what I mean? So it was,
yeah.
It's really hard, I find, to get really good help. And I think it's great that, like, your story is inspiring to me that you found a teacher that believed.
You know, man, that was life changing. And then we're so fortunate. So my wife is currently finishing up her teacher, our alternative teacher certificate.
Nice.
And she's teaching at a pre-K. So, and it's funny because she'll see kids and she'll go, wow, I know what that is. And then try to help the family and say, look, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but you might want to look
at
getting tested or whatever else. And some parents don't want to hear that. Some parents do. But, man, that school, College Park Elementary, where he was at for 2 years, man, this year is the first year, all 3 years almost. This year is the first year. He's in first grade now. And this is the first year that he's been at a different school. And, man, we were terrified because we're like, because, you know, new teachers, new students. And, you know, with him being, my son is built like his dad. He's a big, thick kid. He doesn't understand sarcasm. I'm afraid if he ever got really angry, as thick and strong as he is, we may have a problem at the school. But the new school he's at, again, so fortunate. He's got the teacher's aides that love him. He's got another great teacher who is understanding and kind and calm and pushes him to do his schoolwork and helps him and understands that sometimes you got to back away and let him kind of vent for a minute and then he can refocus.
Yeah.
You know, and they understand he loves animals. So they're smart enough to start talking about animals with him and then get him back into his schoolwork. It's amazing the people we've had around us. But that, like I said, the first teacher, Amanda, was amazing. And we still talk to her on Facebook and whatnot. Super awesome lady, but she gave us hope. And, you know, having that and you know, us, you and I, our story's been so different. Having a 2-year-old and a 17-year-old when they're diagnosed, such a massive difference. But I feel, I hate to say it this way, I feel fortunate that we were able to.
Oh, absolutely. Find
out too, because finding out later in life, I have a guy that I worked with that didn't. I think he was son was like 14 or so when he finally got him diagnosed, and he said, "I wish I would have went earlier because I didn't. I saw some of the signs, but I ignored them, and then later on in life, so." He said, I wish I would have went earlier. And I'm fortunate. I'm very blessed that we got Keegan diagnosed at 2 because it helped. And so, again, having people on your side really helps you because sometimes, like you said, they give you these leaflets of paper that, man, you're trying to read them, understand them. Well, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a therapist. So when you have a teacher who sits down and says, look, this is what we see. So this is what we're working on. And they listen, like, cause my wife Victoria will go in there and tell them, hey, look, here's what he will do. And like, she tells them, hey, he's a runner. Just so you know, if he gets the opportunity to take up, man, sometimes they let him do his thing. So I think the most important thing, And some people don't get it as quickly as I did, but to get good people around your child that give you that hope to let you know, hey, he's having good reports of, hey, he's doing well. Mm-hmm. Man, that warms my heart when they say, hey, today, well, in fact, we got told here not too long ago, you know, he's very sweet to other students. We're like, he is. Because, man, him and his little sister do not get along. And I said, really? And they're like, oh, he'll pick up when somebody drops something, he'll pick it up. She said, the other day, little boy got upset. His cookie fell off the desk, hit the floor, got crumbled, and thrown away. Keegan gave him one of his cookies. Yeah. And I was like, are you kidding me? Because the dude loves cookies, man. He's a sweetie. So when you hear those things, you're like, you have these glimpses and these feelings of hope that you're like, dude, my son is interacting with other people. And it's exciting. It's exciting to get those glimmers and moments of my son thriving. And, you know, like I said, I try to be positive, even though sometimes I'm not. I believe, no matter what anyone says, I think my son's going to be able to live on his own. I think he's going to be able to be employed. He loves animals. I'm praying to God we get him a job at the zoo.
Or you just want free passes, be honest.
I do, man. Something about the gorilla cage. I don't know. But anyway. It's all those years they called me the vanilla gorilla. So, but you know, it just – when you get to that point that things are starting to look up or you see some positives, like for you, when your son is holding down a job and he's doing things and he's socially interacting with other people, you feel good. You're like, man, this is him thriving, you know? And that's what's for me and you both. We both want the same thing. We want our kids to thrive. We want them to do well and be happy. That's it. I don't need my son to be a millionaire. I mean, it'd be nice if he was a millionaire and he wanted to take care of dad. It would bother me, but you know.
Well, yeah. And you bring up a good point too. Like it's hard to see the forest for the trees when you're in it in a daily.
Yeah.
You know, but when you have other people talk to you about it, you're like, well, damn. Like, you know, he, Kilb got into an accident, totaled his car. Yeah. And, he just went out and bought a car with his own credit and just went at it. And I'm like, damn, like, you know, who would have thought 5 years ago we would be here?
That's awesome. Yeah. I remember sending me a picture of him buying his car.
Yeah. But you look at it from a daily perspective, and it's interesting the perspective of time gives, like looking at our videos that we both made a year ago.
Yeah.
And I look at that video and I was like, damn, like there's so much relationships were built from that. And so much has changed since then. Now, did your family, not only your like immediate household family, but your support system family, what was that adjustment period like for them? Were they accepting? Was it denial? Because I know like at our generation, we're a little bit more, we're somewhere in the middle of like the younger generation to the boomers, to our generation, the Xers to the boomers. I feel like there's a very hard disconnect between feelings and psychological issues and dealing with things, you know, we don't deal with things the way our dads did, good or bad.
No. So I'm very fortunate. My mother was a pre-K teacher for over 20 years, 25 years. And my mother has seen things like that. And, you know, being naive for me was a problem. Like I thought my son was just bad.
Like, yep. I get it.
When we went to a restaurant and he would cover his ears and get mad and not, and eat his meal as quick as he could. And then just be upset and having a tantrum, so I'd spank him and take him to the van, not knowing at the time that he's on the spectrum, he's autistic, and that the noise and all this stimulus is overwhelming to him. Man, I felt like a dick when we got the diagnosis, and me and my wife were like, I've spanked him and taken him to the van because he can't behave, when really it's not his fault. There's all this noise. You know, we had to adjust things. We had to learn. Hey, man, we don't go to eat at 7 o'clock in the evening. We go to eat at 5. It's not as busy, you know. But my mother, like I said, my mother, 25 years, pre-K teacher. And she had, I think it helped her because she realized that over 25 years, some of the things she had seen that she didn't know what they were all of a sudden made sense now. And then my father's like me. Oh, we'll get him fixed. Get some therapy, get
fixed. Get some zip ties and wrenches. We'll fix it.
You know, now my dad realizes, and we've all kind of grown and changed to where, okay, we're not going to fix him. We're going to help him. He's going to thrive. Mm-hmm. We want to, but my dad has been like, and you know, of course, at first my dad, you know, oh, there's nothing wrong with him. He's fine. He's just late talker. I was the same way. To where I got it from, my dad's like, he's just a late bloomer. He said, look how big he is. Strong like an ox. He can be fine, you know. When they got, it's funny because I joke with my parents because you know, my son doesn't have like the inner monologue. He doesn't have volume control. So it'll be nice and quiet. And then you'll get this high pitched scream and squeal of him laughing. And you jump thinking, somebody died. What happened? And the first time that happened to my dad, and Keegan was running around screaming, doing it, my dad's eyes real big. And I said, welcome to every day, buddy. Because they don't get to see it all the time. Because my parents, they keep the kids for us, and they're awesome. But for them, it was an adjustment. And it took some mindset change for them, just like it did for me. Now, my wife's parents, her dad, stepmom, her mom, everybody was very supportive. We're very fortunate. There was nobody who was like, oh, no, that's a bullshit diagnosis. Nobody was that way. I think everyone saw that there were some things that didn't make sense, and we need to find out. So we're very fortunate that there was no – we really had no negativity. My parents are amazing, supportive. My wife they like my wife better than they do me. What a shock. But I mean, everybody just was in our corner. Now, I didn't feel like the doctors were in our corner, if I'm being honest, because they gave us, they were like, man, when they give you some of those that diagnosis and they're just matter of factly going, oh, he's just going to live with you for the rest of his life. And they look at you and you go, are you serious? That's,
you have any other questions before I leave?
I was like, yeah, no, they go, is there anything I should talk about? Well, let's go back. Can we reopen that? I was like, let's just not shut that chapter. But no, we were fortunate. Good support system, good people around us. And then honestly, man, my wife and I have been through so much together that we just made the decision. If we've got each other, there's not anything we can't handle. It might suck, but we're going to handle it. And that's how we've lived life. So, I think the thing, and you know, I said this earlier and I'll probably repeat it 10 times tonight, bro, but I always look at other people and what they're going through. Okay. And I had a guy that I worked with that had a daughter who got cancer and lost her leg and then lost her battle to cancer at like 14 years old. Okay. So my life's not that bad. Okay. Nope. I know people who have a son that's autistic that has never spoken a word to them. And he's 14 years old. Just never spoke to him. He will sit in his chair and rock back and forth and watch his Kindle. And he only eats foods that are brown or yellow. That's it. And he only drinks water. That's it. Okay. They've never had a conversation with their son. They've never got that connection with their son like you and I have got with ours, okay? My life is not that bad, dude.
Yeah.
I'm not dealing with that. I would love my son no matter what if I was dealing with that, just like they do. But, man, I always try to look at other people's situations and say, okay, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. I'm blessed. And take what I've got, work with it the best I can, and try to help other people realize, you know what? It could always be worse. Things are going to get better. This, you know, I can't tell you what to do for your child number one. You can tell me. It's a 17-year-old that's diagnosed and a 2-year-old. It's massively different. Your son's 23 now. My son's 7. There's a big difference there between what works for your son and how you can help him versus how I'm helping my son. But I can tell you right now, we're both blessed because we're able to have this conversation with each other. We're able to. We both shot texts to each other going, dude had a shitty week. Sons have it and help each other. We have a support system. That's the thing for me. Get, man, try to find people that support you in your corner. If somebody's not in your corner, find somebody who will be. And that's sometimes, and I hate to say this with family, family's not always in your corner. You can love them from afar, but sometimes you got to get negativity away from you and get people in your corner who are going to support you and say, look, I'm here. If you need to vent, I'm here. You know what I mean? So,
well, and that's interesting you say that, because that's the one thing that the last few years of my life have taught me is getting perspective, is that there are people that you can be socially interact with, but they're maybe not friends. And then there are people.
Yeah.
What's that?
Go ahead, bro. Go ahead.
And then there's those people that are toxic. You know what I mean? And you don't realize it till you remove yourself from it. And I always say there's two types of people in your life. There's people that if you call them, go, where do I need to be? Mm-hmm. And then there's the people that are like, well, if you need anything, you let me know, right. Which basically is just flipping you off. And they don't mean to do that, but no, it's just the way they deal with things. And I find that the more you get away from the negativity and you get with people that are positive, even if our, you know, like our communication between, you won't fucking believe what happened this week with, you know, XYZ, you know, because we're parents and we deal with these things, but it comes from a place of love, if that makes sense, because saying it to you is someone that goes, yeah, been there or haven't been there, but I've been here. You know what I mean? And I think that that's important.
Well, you know, Victoria, I had a really good friend I was friends with. We're not friends anymore. Long story. But she told me, look, you don't have to be friends with them, but you can be friendly.
Yes, exactly. 100%.
Okay. She's like, you don't have to go hang out with them and go ride and do all things you used to do, but you can be friendly. It's okay to be friendly. And there's some people in your life that, man, you're just going to have to be friendly with them and not be friends. And you know that. That happens. Relationships break down as we get older. Things happen, whatever. But you've got to look – when you're dealing with these kind of things, you've got to sit back and look and say, okay, being a family member or whoever it might be, you've got to say, okay, I don't need the negativity of them saying you're overreacting, there's nothing wrong, whenever you know there's something going on, and be with people who say, hey man, what do you need? What, or just, it's always, even for me, man, my work schedule, you know, I've talked about, work schedule is ridiculously stupid. There's times where you'll text me at 10 in the morning. I don't answer you till 2 because I just woke up. And, but knowing, hey, you're checking on me, or Salty's checking on me, or so, having people that check on you and give a damn about you, Colin from More Paint, or Truck and Biker, old crazy ass John, having them text and check on you means something. Having people in your corner that go, hey man, hope you're doing good today. It means something. Just having people that give a shit about you. And when you're dealing with raising an autistic child or helping an autistic adult child, no different. Man, having some positive feedback and support in your life is, I think I'd say it's paramount to helping you be able to keep your sanity. Because there's sometimes it's, you know, I know that my wife stayed home and didn't work until this last year. So she spent a lot of time at home and I spent a lot of time working. And then there's days I would come home and I could see the look in her eyes. She's just like, we had a rough one. And I would say, get out of the house. So she would go meet somebody for dinner or go get her nails done and stay gone 2 or 3 hours. And I would take care of what I need to take care of, because you've got to have that time to get your mental faculties back to deal with it again. We're fortunate things have gotten much better with my son. If you listen carefully in a minute, you'll hear him running down the hallway yelling. But, I mean, it's at least it's a happy yell. He's talking to us. I'll tell you, I take what I get, you know. So,
I think that it's very important to we talk about this a lot, Katie and I, that it's very important to have a partner where you're just like, Jesus, take the wheel. I do not have control of this. And that was the hardest thing for me to open up to, like you said, as a male, right?
Oh yeah.
I wasn't that way in other relationships. I certainly wasn't that way in my previous marriage. But with what we deal with and what we've been through, you just need somebody to be like, I don't have this. I don't even have a third of this. There, I forget giving 50%. You're getting one. You know what I mean? Like, I don't got it. And I think it's important to have that relationship with your spouse that you can understand that, because you're managing two things, right? You're managing the stress of the situation, and then there ain't nothing more worse than spouse stress. You know what I mean? It's just not.
And I think the thing is that, and I feel for people who, I'm loud. I say what I say. If there's something on my mind, you're going to know about it because I'm not going to hide it. Victoria is very calm and will hide how she feels and won't erupt like I will. And, that communication between us, I just told her, you've got to be honest with me and tell me, because, man, there's sometimes we talk about this. I'll work 13 days in a row. I'll do 13, 12-hour shifts and get one day off. And I told her, I don't care how tired you think I am. She's come to me crying, going, babe, I had a horrible day. I had the youngest one doing this, and then Keegan had a full-fledged meltdown, and Duty had a rough day. Had a rough, rough day. And it really grated on her because all of her day wasn't spent doing the things she needed to do. It was spent taking care of Keegan. And I told her, I was like, hey, she vented to me, got it out of her system. She got in the car. She took the oldest daughter, and they went and drove around and got some coffee. And you got to get out. You got to get your mind right, because guess what? Tomorrow morning, it's coming back at you. It doesn't go away. That's the thing about autism and being autism. It doesn't go away. There tomorrow.
Do you remember that poster that was very big probably in the 80s of the stork swallowing the frog and the frog was choking the stork?
Right.
Yeah. That's our family motto. It's like, we're just choking the stork.
Because you've got to survive. It's funny. You know, sometimes you feel like you're in survival mode. Now you have times that everything's awesome and you feel like, wow, we've made some progress. Things are good. And then you have times or weeks, you know this, weeks of just, holy crap, that was a day. You go to bed and the house is a disaster. Yeah. And you're like, we're not touching it. We're going to sleep. We'll start again tomorrow, you know? So
I always tell people you kind of have to, and not that I am military or anywhere related to it, but I always feel like you have to adopt the Navy SEAL philosophy of the only easy day was yesterday because it's over, right? Because you don't know. I mean, we had dealt with a complete crisis situation where he was an inpatient for a week, and that was the most horrible experience to deal with. But we learned from that that we needed a crisis plan. We know there is no doubt when the shit hits the fan, we know exactly what we need to do. And I think that that's very important, because you can't be in the moment and try and think sometimes. You just have to execute.
Yeah.
Well, and it's hard.
It is. And again, man, I just always look at things like, how bad could it be? You know what I'm saying? Victoria and I always make the joke. And she says, how bad can things get? Right. And when
you don't say that out loud, though, ever.
We do.
I'm joking. I know I'm joking.
We do. But you know what? Every time we think of how bad could things get, and we look at whatever might it be that happened that day, and we're like, it wasn't that bad. We had a win today. So that's our thing. Look, this is the worst things that could happen. If they didn't happen, we had a win today. And, you know, again, like I said, and you know this, I don't have a blended family, so it's us and our four kids. I got to say, for me, one of the hardest things was I had to realize I can't focus all my attention on Keegan. I have three other children who need me, and I don't want them to resent their brother because I focused all my attention on him. So I try to make sure that my daughter, my oldest daughter, I'm a sucker. She's got her driver's license today, by the way.
Nice. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'll be honest with you. If you're in the city of Houston, stay off the roads for a bit. Might be the best idea.
I mean, Setzer Pendon's got that new bike. He's not coming up to see you anytime soon, though.
Oh, no. We'll get into that. He's headed to Tennessee. He's going straight to Moonshine. That's where he's going. He's going to Moonshine Harley. But anyway.
I can't see how that would ever end bad with him.
I neither could I. But anyway. But I had to realize, like, the 16-year-old, she loves to go to the 7-Eleven by here and get tacos and coffee. So I would drive her to school and get tacos and coffee and just let sit and talk with dad. And then my 13-year-old is getting ready for football. So I go out in the garage and work out with him. We do football drills and spend time with him and let him know he's important. And then the 4-year-old, she wants to show me what she's drawn and what she's done at school. So I try. That's the hard part. And I would tell parents, if you have an autistic child, you have other children, don't feel guilty because you had to take some time away from your autistic child to give your other children what they need from you too, because your other kids, they need you just as much as your autistic child. And my grandmother used to say something to me. I would joke. My dad would always say, "Mom, who do you love the most?" And my grandmother would look at him and say, the kid that needs me the most, that's the one I love the most. And he goes, "Really?" She said, "On that day, it might be you. It could be your sister. It could be your other sister." For us, we've looked at it and we've said, which kid needs us the most? A lot of times, yes, Keegan needs us the most, but we want to make sure we don't spread ourselves thin and we let our other children know they're just as important, because we don't want them to resent their brother. It's really what I don't want my kids to resent me or resent their brother because we spent more time with him trying to help him than we did with them. So that's something to juggle. That's another aspect of it that a lot of people don't talk about, but we just want to make sure, like, I want my oldest daughter to know her theater and competition's important to dad. I want my son to know his football games are important to dad. I want the 4-year-old to know that that we don't talk about Bruno. Encanto's important to me, okay? So, I mean, you know, I want them to realize that mom and dad are going to give them as much attention as we give to their brother. And sometimes, like I said, for parents of an autistic child, that's a difficult situation because you feel like this child needs more of your attention, that your child with autism, than anybody else. And you've got to step back sometimes and say, okay, yes, but my kids, all of my children need me, and I've got to make sure that I let them know how important they are as well. So that's another tough situation to be in.
Yeah. One of the strange things you watch when lockdown first started, but we watched it's one of the Mr. Rogers movies that came out 2 years ago. Right. One of the coolest things that got away from that movie was that the most important person to him was who he was talking to.
Right.
Everything in the peripheral didn't matter. And that's very hard to do in this world.
Oh, it is. Well, because there's so many distractions, you know as well as I do, the whole time we're doing this, that my phone has gone off 55 times with people messaging me, wanting me to do this or do that, or replying to a YouTube video I put out today, whatever episode it might be. But you're right. There's times where you have to sit back, and I think you and I have had this conversation before, where I've got to focus on what's ahead of me, what I'm doing now. And that might be on Keegan. That might be on my son has autism, or it might be on what my daughter's going through. But one thing at a time, man. You know, what's that old saying? How do you eat a whale? You're one bite at a time. You start it just one bite at a time, and you just move forward. So,
and I think that's the huge takeaway that I would give another parent is, again, in my professional world, you know, when you manage a project that's, you know, say you're building a building, right? You got to start somewhere. And that's the thing that we learned with teaching Caleb, was that we joke about this because it's never happened, but it's like, you know, you could tell him to go to the store, but maybe you should have remembered that he might forgot to have gotten dressed. And I'm joking when I say that, but you kind of have to remember there's a lot of steps. And you have to, the smallest wins add up to the biggest victories.
Oh yeah.
Because it's just reinforcing the positive, you know what I mean? Cause if I looked from where we were the day of the diagnosis, sitting at dinner, looking at that report, being like, I don't even know where to start, to, hey, you know, hey, by the way, my new EV car, I can plug it in an Amazon at my job and ride for free. And you're like, how did we get here in seven years? You know, it's very hard that, you know, you don't need to focus on becoming the CEO of the company. We need to focus on this everyday steps first.
And see, that's the thing I've told you before. I've said it while we were talking now. But see, Caleb's story gives me hope for Keegan. It gives me hope that, hey, guess what? My son has the ability to live on his own. My son has the ability to have his own job. My son has the ability to do these things and thrive. Because I think there's some people that when they get the diagnosis, they think, well, Victoria and I had the conversation. What do we do if something happens to us with Keegan? Who's going to take care of Keegan? And my 13-year-old son's like, I got him, Dad. Don't worry about it. I'm crying because he's like, you mom, don't worry about that. If Keegan needs to be with somebody, he's my brother. I'll do that. I'm getting emotional, but I'm getting torn up right now. But, you know, talking to you and talking to other people, I'm like, dude, I believe that my son is going to thrive. I'm going to live on his own. He's going to have a job, maybe meet a nice girl one day who can deal with him the way my wife's dealt with me, and have a family and thrive. When I see stories, people have sent me stuff about people working jobs and people in high up, crazy high positions. And the guy's saying, oh, I'm autistic. I'm on the spectrum. And this is what I do. And he shows how he goes through his day and how when he goes to meetings, he focuses on the wall in the back. And I'm like, dude, there's a guy that's a CEO of a company that's autistic. There's hope for my son. You know, it gave me something that made me say, dude, you know what? Your son, other people's daughters, other people's son, gave me hope to say my son can thrive and do things on his own. And that's all I want, is for him to thrive. You know what I mean? And be success. I'm not, look, man, I don't care about
success is relative to it, right? Man.
I want them to thrive and be happy. Do something they enjoy doing. Look, man, hey, my job's cool. I make good money. I don't love it. I'd rather be riding motorcycles and testing parts and doing YouTube videos. That's not how it works. So, but I want them to be happy and I want them to thrive. And that's the main thing, you know?
And I think that's admirable. So if we had to wrap this whole interview up and put it into a soundbite, what would you, as Smitty, as a parent to a child with autism, what would you say to them? So the person that's never met you before, what's your advice?
My advice is to love your kids. The first thing you have to do,
hell yeah,
love your kids. Love your kids and understand that no matter what happens, that's your child. Love that child And under, you know, every relationship in your life is trying. There are times when your relationship with Kate is trying. My relationship with Victoria is trying. Every relationship in your life is trying. Love that child. Understand that no matter what, good days, bad days, it's a season in life. Yep. Love that child. There are people out there who know what you're going through. There are people out there who understand. There are people out there who will encourage you. Don't feel like you're alone. Don't feel like you are hopeless. Get with people who will be positive. Get with people who will encourage you and love your child. Love your child and know that the main goal is for your child to thrive. That would be what I would say to people. Love your child and be around positivity, because bottom line, man, there's a lot of negativity in this world. We see it every day. Shut the noise out, shut the negativity out, and do the best you can to love your child. Put the bullshit aside. Love that child and be around people that will encourage you and be positive.
I don't even know what to say after that. That's it in a nutshell.
I'm sober. That's crap. I mean, that was for sober me. That was awesome.
I mean, I feel like that's you're a prophet.
Wow, I wouldn't go that far. A few more drinks, and I can tell you some good stories.
Yeah, but we're gonna have to censor those stories.
Yeah, that's for no, and live
stream. You know, and I genuinely. Oh, sorry, I'm getting choked up. I genuinely appreciate your candor and the fact that you're willing to put it out there, because as we've both learned, that the connection that we can make as human beings and what we can give back, especially with this platform, is so huge.
Oh yeah.
But you just have to jump off the ledge and say, well, screw it, right? You know, what it doesn't matter, you know.
What's the worst that could happen? I've said, you know, I made a video that didn't have a lot of views on it for the autism video, but it helped somebody. If you and I put this thing out, when you put it out, if it gets 50 views and three people get something they needed and they realize there's somebody, if they reach out to you or they reach out to me and they feel better about life, dude, it was worth sitting here and me and you bullshitting for an hour and talking about autism and talking about what we've been through and pouring our hearts out a little bit. It was worth it.
So. Absolutely. And I think that that's the one thing that a lot of, not to get on another soapbox, but I think that's a lot of things that people miss, is that if you have a platform, you have the ability to change people. And it doesn't matter if you changed a million people or you changed two, you still changed somebody.
That's right, man.
You know, and that's awesome. Smitty, thank you so much, man. I mean, man to man, I love you like a brother. I mean, you've been a huge support for me, and I appreciate it.
Well, man, you know how I feel about you. I love you too. I'm grateful for our friendship, and I'm grateful for your honesty. Like I said, man, you, dude, I've always said you've never said a cross word to me. You've always been good to me. You've always been open and honest. And having that connection with having sons that battle with autism, man, it's given us somebody to talk to that the people who don't. Or not going through it, don't understand it. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think that we all owe it to each other, right? Because as Keegan grows older, you're going to have perspective to give to somebody that's younger.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that that's important, because we can all learn from each other. You know, because we all had that oh shit moment. We've all had that oh shit moment where you're like, now what?
Yeah.
Because I don't even know where to start.
Yeah. What do I do now? So, and it's nice that there's people out there who can say, well, I've been through that. Let me help you. So.
Yes. Well, Smitty, thank you so much. I wish you all the best. And I look forward to doing this next year and talking about where we're at.
I know. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Yeah. We just got to fix your technical issues. But, you know.
Well, let's look. Okay, time out. Before you end that. This is the same guy who still edits on an iPad with iMovie. And I'm not technically savvy.
And remind me again, you have like twice the subscribers I have.
Yeah, whatever.
Sure.
When I have a problem, there's three people I get a hold of. I work with a guy named Adam Hans, who's a tech guru. You or Jason Setzer-Pendens. That's it. I think of, oh, wow, how bad is this? Oh, shit, let me call Brian. Hey, if it's a camera issue and I'm going to go riding, I call sets of pendants. If it's anything to do with anything else, I work with a guy named Adam Hans who will go, hey, man, I'm going to send you a link. This is how you fix it. Hey, thanks. And he hangs the phone. He didn't say, hey, talk to you later. He just hangs up. Look at my phone 2 minutes later. There's a link. I click it, and it fixes everything. So I never claimed to be tech savvy, buddy.
Brother, I appreciate it. I really do. I mean, this is what I try and be about, and I appreciate it, and I love your positivity.
Well, man, hey, love you. Thank you, my friend. Thank you for having me on, and I appreciate you and everything you do for the community. And, dude, keep doing what you're doing, man. I appreciate it.
Everybody, make sure you check out Big Smitty's channel, and I'll put all the links in the bio. I'll put the link to the original autism video that he did. And if you are listening to this on the podcast version, you can follow Big Smitty Riding on YouTube, and the video version of this will be on my Bride the Biker channel. The intent of this really was to give you hope and to realize that, you know, I always end my videos with you're not alone, and I want this video to sort of be proof of that. And I hope that if nothing else, if we can help one person, then this conversation is worth it.
Well worth it.
So with that, please remember you're not alone. And as always, thanks for watching. Have a great weekend. Bye.